everyone. This is Courtney Edwards. You're listening to the HER podcast from the Razorback Campersdale Studio. This show's focus is highlighting women in the community who are making an impact, whether big or small. Well, I'd like to welcome our first guest to the HER podcast. This is Sandra Gonzalez. She's the project director for the diversion team at Ouachita Behavioral Health and Wellness. So, Sandra, tell us a little bit about the diversion team. What is that?
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. We're really excited about this diversion team. And basically what it is this is a grant. It's a federal grant that goes through Ouachita that has been written, and it is a small team. And basically we are to reduce the recidivism rates that are in our area. So, and this is specifically not just for people incarcerated, but people who with mental health, serious mental health, plus a co-occurring, which is usually substance abuse. So we are trying to reduce those numbers because a lot of the courts are seeing the same people over and over, and half of them maybe don't have a diagnosis. And so we're trying to help reduce those rates and maybe get them into treatment, maybe diverting them instead of a felony court, possibly misdemeanor, with a possible maybe go to a different type of treatment center for detox possibly. And it's to help the law enforcement as well as the courts with all the population that we're trying to serve.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been with OBHA, and did you start with criminal justice, or did you kind of work your way up to that?
Well, at OBHA, I have been here since October. I have been a counselor. I have taken many criminal justice classes, but I've been a counselor for 20 years, and for different areas. And there's always so I was a drug and alcohol counselor for a while here in Hot Springs. And you get to know many of the officers and situations in one job. I was a rehab counselor for a while. And, well, that's not so much the interaction, but you still have to deal with maybe probation officers, ankle monitors. We did start, actually, the year before I left, we had just started before COVID. We started going into the jails to let them know, hey, here's a program. Do you need some services? Do you need insurance? And this was at the rehab. So we were just getting that off the ground when COVID hit. So that was kind of the entryway for me to come to OBHA and get started with this program.
So when was the diversion team assembled? Was that around the same time when you started at OBHA?
Close. The grant was activated in September. I was hired in October, and the team really fully came together in January. It's a very tight labor market, and we finally got the team members that I think were really appropriate to the role that comes with a lot of experience. That's one thing I feel really blessed with my team. Each one of them has a specialty that they've got experience in. So basically January is when they got in, and then we really started getting off the ground, seeing clients.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So where did you go to college? Did you study criminal justice, anything like that?
Well, I'm originally Lakeside alumni, go Rams. My daughter's volleyball there. But I went to Fayetteville and got a degree in journalism, actually. And then I received, in between there, actually when I came back to Hot Springs for a while, and actually worked here at the paper for a few years in the production department. And then actually took some classes of criminal justice out here at Garland County. And then eventually made my way to Austin, and I received my master's degree in counseling there. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with a journalism degree, what made you want to make that transition to criminal justice and counseling?
Well, I've always had there's always the underdog spirit. And now that I'm seeing a lot of it that you suspect when you're younger, but now that you're older, you're really seeing there's some people who shouldn't be in jail. and some people who are, let's say, schizophrenic, and maybe they were off their medications, and there's nobody, their parents have died, there's no one there to help. It's kind of been an interest I've always had, but going into being a drug and alcohol counselor as well, you see a lot of the, I'm very supportive of the police and the sheriff's offices because they have to do what they do to keep us safe. But it's also, you can see the other side where the kid's suffering and you see multi-generation kids coming in and he's, you know, help me, but you know what, their parents are doing the same thing at home, and but they're trying to get out of it. And so that's where a lot of the compassion, the patience comes in for counseling, where most people are just, you know, people are just throwaways. And I don't believe that. I think everyone has got value. I believe everybody's worth saving. And some people just need more help than others.
So there's probably been a need for something like this for a very long time, but as you said, it just started in January, the diversion team did. Mm-hmm. So what would you say was the final catalyst to get that going?
Well, director at APHA, Susan Smith, and Michelle Quim and Dr. Rob Gershon, they have a program already in place, which is the CCBHC, and that was it's much more about more inclusivity of the community. And a specific little program that is done is ACT. And basically they go out into the community, and what they were finding was is that a lot of the people with mental illness or severe and substance abuse, a lot element had the criminal part. They had some type of history. So they found themselves, they're like, look, here's an underserved need. People with serious mental illness, a co-occurring disorder like substance abuse, and it's like, well, we've got all these people, but they can't spend, they're like, hey, can you help me? Can you go to court with me? Somebody hold my hand? Somebody just be there for me? Can you, you know, or they get the sheet from probation, and they're like, maybe they have an intellectual disability, and like, what is this? What does this say? And so that's what gave the brainchild for them to write this new grant, to be able to, like, you know what, here's another served need. There's these people who need someone to just, we talk to probation officers all the time. What's going on? And they talk to us like, you know what, I don't think they really understood this. We call them up and say, hey, you know what, you know, you got a court date. No, it's Thursday. No, actually, it's tomorrow. You've got to be there. Because a lot of the people who come out of jail, some have medications or prison, some have medications, some don't. And so that's part of the things that we also do is the kind of like wraparound services, because diversion's been around a long time. But we're specifically being called that because there's many groups want to do lower recidivism rates in their own way. And we do it with more intense wraparound services for like insurance, social security cards. ID is a big problem we have. They come out and maybe they've, a lot of transplants because of our town. We have people who come here and, you know, we have a lot of part-time jobs, seasonal jobs, and they stay here. And so people tend to have any lost purses, stolen things, and getting them just to like, well, I want a job, but you know what? I have a felony. Can you help me? Yes, as a matter of fact, we can. And we worked real close with our other community nonprofits around here about, you know, keeping our list up to date of how, like, look, I can't pay for this, but maybe could you maybe pay for that? And so we're constantly referring to one another. I just had a conversation with Kim at CCMC about it just last week, and we're talking more about housing, which is our big crisis right now, just for anybody else trying to get a house. But if you have a felony, you have anything on your record that's severe, well, good luck. And so that's a real big need we have right now.
Absolutely, it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already spoken a little bit about this, but what all services do you provide as the diversion team?
Okay. Well, we're a small six-member team. We have a professional licensed mental health therapist. They have to see her, okay? And sometimes it is, she provides a diagnosis, you know, because sometimes there's, like I said, a lot of people, because we have very young to very old. It is amazing the gamut we have of age ranges and all types of diversity of people. And so she, they have to see her for mental health services. We have a case manager, and she also provides things like getting insurance. We're helping several people with, they tend to lose their checks. Those with any type of intellectual disability, they've got, they receive a monthly check and they've lost it. That happens a lot. You'd be surprised. And then they get out and they're like, can somebody help me get back on this? Well, there's this, actually, before you get out, there's certain laws where, yes, actually, before certain time frame, yes, you can start getting this before you get out. So she knows all those laws. She's really into that. And any other types of needed services to make sure, whatever wraparound, you know, housing is another big one that she does. And then another team member is our peer support. She is our certified peer support. She is very active. She will go to with clients to like NA meetings, AA meetings. She'll go with them the first few times to get them comfortable, to see if it fits with them. Because, you know, there's the secular ones, but there's also the religious ones. And so she's comfortable. She will go, and she will be encouraged. She actually, she runs two free group community groups a week at APA, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 3 o'clock, which anybody's welcome to come to. We would love to have more people. Right now, it's still a lot of Zoom. People still right now prefer or comfort with Zoom, and that's good. And then we have our forensic support. Now, that's something fairly new that most agencies don't have. Because at APA, we have three peer supports. But our forensic support, Ms. Sarah, she's had a long history with Garland County. And basically, she's the one that she goes to court. So she goes to court and she will stand in front of Schweitzer, Ohm, Judge Graham, and they will give an accounting of, yes, they're coming to therapy. Yes, they're getting services. Yes, we're helping them get a job. She has talked to lawyers. She's big help with the probation office. That is like really a big thing, because like our Malvern office, that's right now a really big, they give us a lot of referrals. Southwest Probation, they have now really been sending us more referrals, because sometimes some of these people who aren't trained in mental health, they sometimes like, okay, we got this guy and he's acting funny. It's like, okay, well, we're going to send you to the emergency services first, and let's make sure they're stable and they're okay, and then that we will sometimes get a referral from them, depending on what's happening with that person. And then our last team member is our warm line manager, which is awesome. It's not a hotline. Now, I didn't know this before I got here. You know, hotlines are like an emergency, dire crisis. A warm line is just information. Okay, it's just information about, you call up and like, okay, you know, my son, this is what he's going through. He can't keep a job. He's crying, you know, in his room all the time. He just caught a charge of public intox. Can you help me? And she will sit there and she's awesome. She's very patient. She'll listen. And that's when she starts like, okay, you know what? Does he have any criminal history? Yes. Okay. Well, you know, we have a diversion program. Or no, he doesn't. Well, you know what? We have our walk-ins. So you know what? Come on in. And so she helps sort to like where in the different programs they need. I'm homeless. I've only got this little phone. And she goes, okay, well, we're going to refer you over to PATH, to Boyce. And let's see if we can get you some services. And it's, so you actually get a real person on a real phone. And it's 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. And she can call and you can call her. Anytime during that time, and she will help step you through what you need to do to get some help. And that's pretty much the main six roles we have on our team.
Right.
Yeah.
So what would you say your main responsibility with the team is?
Administration. I don't, let's say I'm not on the front lines anymore. That, you know, doing the paperwork, making sure that referrals are proper. Because sometimes we just get, they come through me, it's just a piece of someone's name on there and it says sadness. Well, we need more information because we have to meet our qualifier, you know, our qualifiers, you know, so they can get in the program, because we have metrics. I talk to the federal, our GPO officer every month, and we know how it's going, how your number's doing. Do you need something to help? let you know these things are coming up, you got to report. So they keep us, you know, pretty much in check of what's going on and all that kind of good stuff. So that's pretty active. So it's a lot of paperwork. So, you know, I take a lot of the reports, I write the reports, you know, their time cards, administrative. So make sure we are in a 5 catchment area. So it's helping coordinate with our mental health and our case manager and peer support and forensic, like, okay, where are we going to be today? We tend to go to Malvern these days, Arkadelphia these days. Okay, she needs this report. We have to get this type of report. And so it's coordination, you know, as well. So we're talking to each other all the time, emailing, texting each other. We have work phones. So we're constantly, okay, listen, she just relapsed. She's back in jail. You know, her mother's called. You know, we have a release. Can we talk to them? Hey, Schweitzer's got us a call. We need to see somebody. Okay. I mean, it's just, we're constantly, you know what I mean? It's very active. It's just exciting. Which is really great, because we're almost getting our numbers and we're almost there. That's part of my job, is to make sure we hit those marks, those benchmarks that we have for our program.
Right. Okay. Very complicated, but so you said you used to be on the front lines. What did you mean by that? And do you ever miss it?
Oh, the front lines. Well, that's when you're actually. You are talking with a client. They may still be high, like in I was a drug counselor, rehab. That's basically, you're talking with the client, you're talking with their parents, you are actually in, you know, their lives and much more interactive. And so, yeah, sometimes you miss it. But there's also a comfort now that I'm older, is that having the administrative, yeah, it's sometimes paperwork, but sometimes knowing what I'm doing is keeping my team moving forward. I'm always trying to make sure that they have things to do, people to see, where are we missing something. So it's keeping their momentum going as well. So I miss it a little bit, but you know what? There's a little comfort knowing I don't have to go out every day or go out a lot. I get to stay put, but still make change and still make policy and decisions that are going to affect my team as well as the clients.
All right. So mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit more about the qualifiers for getting help from the diversion team and why those are important?
Okay. Well, one of the main things is that, you know, we're ABHA, so they have to have a serious mental illness. They also have to have a co-occurring disorder. And most of the time, like 99% of the time, it's usually substance abuse. But every once in a while, that's not true. But they have to have another significant serious mental illness that affects a high functioning rate in their life. And then they have to have some type of criminal activity. So oftentimes, we sometimes get referrals and they're like, well, he got charged for weed maybe 20 years ago. Is he on probation? No. Parole? No. Okay, well, he's pretty stable. But we sometimes have gotten some old ones where there's been maybe, oh, yeah, I was 10 years clean and there's a relapse. And all of a sudden we're getting a phone call like, you know, he was doing so great, but COVID has just really hit a lot of people hard. So those are some of the main qualifiers, is basically the criminal, they have to have a criminal history, they have to have a serious mental illness, and a co-occurring. It depends on the person and how long that we consider going back.
Okay. Yeah. So you said multiple times now that COVID has really affected what you do and the people who you help. Do you have maybe an example of something that you can share with us from how the pandemic has affected people?
We have several clients that, especially in the more rural areas, that like more like Arkadelphia and Malvern, once people have sheltered in place and stayed home, and if they're adults, that maybe that if they had a substance abuse issue before, plus mental illness, it was worse, exacerbated. And if they don't have a computer, a lot of our people reach out through Zoom. We do a lot of telehealth, which is great. But, you know, there's still some problems with getting, you know, reception down there, either phone-wise or internet-wise. So there's a lot more isolation. And then when you get down in the more rural communities, there's not as much work. And then now if you're a felon or if you have some type of charge against you, well, that makes it even worse. So a lot more isolation, a lot less opportunities for them to try to get back on their feet we're seeing a lot more.
And has that improved any now that we're starting to see the pandemic slow down, or is the effect of the pandemic kind of slowing that down also?
It's really slow.
Yeah.
It's real slow. Because people are starting to get back out again. But the drugs, you know, people sitting home and doing drugs for days on end, and people not wanting to do as much, families not so willing to, you know, support some people with their habit, and then trying to find the housing for that. So it's a really slow process, but I think improvement is coming because more people are wanting to. Some people are wanting to get help. Some people are tired of the rat race. They're tired of blowing all their money up on drugs, and it's like all of a sudden, what? Oh, don't forget, you need to pay for your medicine too. And we have to, you know, remind them that that's still a priority. Your medication is just, you know, more important, you know, than buying that bag. So it's a real slow process. While the numbers are still going up, you know, in jail, in rates, still going up, I think there is a slow turnaround. It's going to take us a while, I think, to recover.
For local content like this and much more, subscribe to the Sentinel Record by visiting hotsr.com and clicking subscribe.
Okay, well, I know when it comes to helping those with substance abuse problems or anything similar to that, if they don't want the help, it's hard for someone else to help them. So do you ever run into the problem of maybe a mother calls for a son or a daughter, and then you try to help and the son or the daughter, they're not accepting it?
Absolutely. Because people can self-referral. It doesn't have to come through the courts. It doesn't have to come through probation. We have crying mothers all the time about the situation. He's bipolar. He's been taking his meds. But then now he's starting drugs. Oh, yeah, many times we get them from parents calling us up. And the parents and the kids are like, I don't need help, or I don't have a problem. I just heard that again this morning from someone who we're trying to help. And it's a real common situation. Even in parole, we get people who the parole people send us somebody, and they're like, well, I don't need help. I don't have a drug problem. Well, being busted 5 times for either a DWI or misdemeanor, you don't think that. And that's part of some people's mental illness. I don't see a problem with it. My cousin smoked for years. He never got in trouble. And people who are resistant to help. And really, what do? If they don't want the help, unless they are court ordered, and that's up to the judges, you know, and that's where we do the accountability of, like, well, they're coming, like their parents will drop them off. And sometimes if they come in and they're, you know, they're higher than a kite, we're like, we can't see you. No therapy can be done today. And their resistant way of, you know, well, mama, get me here, but I ain't going to do it. Well, then when it comes time to go to court and say, well, he technically showed up, but he did not, you know, participate. So, yes, I'm sorry to say that that's still very resistant that we have those cases.
Mm-hmm. So how do you approach those situations and just do the best that you can to make it better?
Well, if they, this program, if they're court ordered is a situation, we continue to try to engage them. We call the mom, we call the person, and we try that way. But oftentimes we do still have a lot of clients that do not want to come in. And you can't make someone eat. You cannot make somebody unless they are forced to. And a judge has to be able, sometimes they get so fed up and like, you know what, you need to go into treatment, inpatient treatment, you have to go. And so we strongly suggest, and we've had some parents that have helped us with that, to get them in inpatient treatment. And others, they're just, well, sink or swim, and, well, we can't, you know, we're outpatient. We are not inpatient. So that's a big difference, and that's why I have to tell, we're not emergency, and we're not inpatient. So basically, if they don't want to, they can feel around all they want, but if they don't come in, we cannot make them. You know, we try to help, but unless the court actually steps in, and which I hate, we don't want to see. We don't see them going to jail. We don't want to go see prison, but sometimes it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
So for anyone who may not know, can you describe the difference between inpatient and outpatient?
Sure. Outpatient, which ABHA is, we have multiple groups that we help all different types of populations. But you have to be able to be come in to the office, make appointments, be stable enough to come in. We also have our MAT program, which is Medicaid Assistant Treatment, which is really great because we sometimes work with them as well because some people are on Suboxone or to help them get with that. But the inpatient, now that is where you will go to Bridgeway. You will go to somewhere. Now, if it's acute, that's why we have Levi in town. That's, you know, people sometimes go to CHI, and then CHI refers them to for a certain type of like maybe 48-hour hold. Or they get referred off to a more serious, and they actually stay there. And it could be sometimes up to, depends on the situation, maybe 30 days, maybe a few weeks. It depends on, you know, everybody's different. And sometimes we've had to refer to the state hospital where they are in maybe full psychosis, and, you know, the jail, maybe they just got out and the mom's like, you know, and so we call an emergency team. They come and assess, and we try to maybe get the state hospital, but now the state hospital has got a wait list, terrible long wait list. And so getting, sometimes people are being held like in this limbo spot where, okay, maybe they just got out of jail. They're waiting to get a bed at the state hospital. And sometimes we have to refer to inpatient facilities, and that's where we have them all over the state where they're going to go maybe stay a few days to get more stable. They have to be mostly stable when they come to outpatient when they see us.
So I want to get more into your career and why you started doing this. So why was it important to you, especially with your degree in journalism and all these other jobs you've had in counseling and other things, why was it important for you to get involved in the diversion team and everything you do here personally?
Well, I had I've still always wanted to be in the counselor type role and use those skills, but when this opportunity came up, it seemed unique. And I had left the rehab after a few months, and it was just something that just, it just spoke to me. But basically, like, because it's like, who is going to help these people who are incarcerated, mentally ill, plus substance abuse? There's so many people, you even say the word court or jail, they freak out. Just driving by it, they freak out. Much less people who are willing to go into the front lines and actually go in there and stand up for somebody. And so it's kind of like that, you know, some people like the words, you know, social justice warrior. I just really like to be able, protecting, like I said earlier, like the little guy. The underdog, someone who, I just give somebody a chance. We all make mistakes. We all mess up. But can you imagine on top of that, you're schizophrenic, and so you're hearing the voices, and you're having a very bad day, and someone comes along to try to sell you something, and you take a hit of something, and next thing you know, you're in the street, and the cops are called, and you're scared. Because it's really interesting, a lot of the, now it's mostly men that we have helped, but it's the stories of the women is just fascinating, what they have endured. Most people would fall apart at some of these characters, these women that have endured so much. And they still have to go on. They still have to live, you know, but we are there to help. But a lot of us at ABHA are very passionate about what we do. Help those with the mental health to help them become stable, independent, for them to live the life that they want. And so I really appreciate that type of work.
Right. So we've already talked a little bit, or you've already given an example of a disheartening story with the pandemic and how that's affected everyone, but do you have more of a heartwarming story of how you've helped someone get back on their feet?
Yes. We had this young lady, and she had court in several counties, which is challenging. And so she was referred to by a close friend, and they came in, and at first we were suggesting inpatient because she was still using, she had these charges, and she was actually, she was hiding from her probation officer, and that happens actually a lot more than you'd think. And we're like helping her to realize, to get her stable, look, she need to go inpatient somewhere. And she went inpatient somewhere, and that didn't last very long. And next thing you know, she was out, and she, but she eventually came back to Hot Springs and found her another inpatient place for her to go to. And she did that, she completed it. She came back to Hot Springs, because a lot of the inpatient places are not in Hot Springs, okay? They're lumber all over the state. And she came back, and she was able to, because we helped her in the program, we were able to actually, our peer support went up to the court and stood up for her and like, look, she is doing it, because her probation officer was not happy with her. And basically stood up for her and said, look, she's coming here. These are things she's been doing. Yes, has she been messing up? Yes. But we're here supporting her. So she keeps coming. So she was able to get her charges finally dropped in one county, and then put here in this county, and we took care of the charges here in this county. So she's gonna be on probation for a while, but she's out of jail. So when the first case first came to us, all these multiple charges, and she was still, you know, still using. So it's a complete turnaround. So we're really, that's one of our first stories. Actually one of our first clients that came to our program.
So how have you worked your way up to where you are now?
Well, I was here for a while, worked here at the paper, but then my fiancé and I, we wanted to got married, and then he finished his college degree in Little Rock, and then he got this great job in Houston, Texas. So, you know, the young, we just took off, no nothing, and just filled up the truck and our baggage and found a place, and we were there for a while. Eventually made it up to Austin, and then I spent 15 years there. I was doing production work, which is kind of like paste up, as a composite layout. Actually, when I was in Houston, I worked at a magazine company doing layout. That was fun. We got to go to a lot of premieres and stuff, which was fun. Then in Austin, I found a job at the Department of Transportation, and I was in there, and I was laying out a lot of the catalogs, magazines, a lot of the paperwork, and they called it composite. I was called a compositor, and basically laying out. And while I was there, I read a lot of the things, we did the manuals for all the Texas Troopers, and because we had the print shop, and that was the big thing for the transportation. We had the big print place. So I worked there for about 13 years, and then had a family, and you have a baby, you tend to go home. And so I did, came back here to Hot Springs, and then I started work as a drug counselor, which is an amazing job. That was a real eye-opening. You get to see a lot of Hot Springs that it doesn't normally get seen. And then after that, I went to the rehab, Arkansas Rehabilitation Services, and was there about almost exactly 5 years. COVID hit. I took a few months off. Next thing you know, this job popped up. So took the opportunity to, like, you know what, because I like to try to, let's just keep going forward. Let's see what else is out there. So.
Well, speaking of, do you have any future goals, aspirations you're working toward now?
Well, yes. Actually, when I got pregnant back in Texas, I had just finished my master's, and when I found out I was pregnant, that put everything on hold. I said, okay, well, I'll finish my licensure when I get to Arkansas. Well, that was a surprise, you know, with a baby and wanting to do books and do an internship just was not in the books for me. So I took some time off and raised my daughter, Lisa, to get her up to Lakeside up until elementary. And then I was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to get back. And at this time, I was at the rehab. And I was like, okay, I'm going to finish my license. Well, oh, I'd started the courses, and I had because I was in Texas, they don't transfer a lot of to Arkansas. Now, it's changed, but they came back and told me, well, you have to take a few more classes. I was like, but I've already took them, and I did well. And they're like, so sorry, you got to take them again. Like, ah! So I had to take these classes again at Euler, and then write my very last class. I was in my intern class, and that's when COVID hit, which was, it was interesting, I must say, trying to get through that last semester when COVID had just started. And so ever since then, it's been put on, I put it on hold. I finished that class, and then, but now that I'm into this position, they're very much encouraging to try to finally finish getting my licensure so I get my LPC. And so that's going to be my next set of goals.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, well, do you have any advice for young women or women just getting started in their career?
Invest in yourself. So many places and things I've seen, you know, it's not about, you know, about getting that family and husband. It will come in time. Please invest in yourself. Take that class. Whether it's knitting and you become your own business, take the time, take the money, do the research. You can Google anything. There's so much free stuff out there and opportunities and scholarships that you can get, single parent scholarships you can get at Garland County. There's just so much opportunity now than there was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago for women, whether you have a child or not, because I know a lot of women have that child and they're divorced or not married or whatever. And it's like, take the time, invest in yourself, because nowadays, you have to take care of yourself. The traditional family unit has crumbled. And so it's really good, I think, to take the time, find out what you like. So many people, they're in jobs they hate, and that breaks my heart. But what are you good at? What are you talented at? They said if you work, you know, if you like the job that you're in, you don't work a day in your life. Is it going to be tough? Yes. You have to pay some money? Probably. But, spend that time on yourself. You're worth it. We women are worth it. Spend that time to value yourself. If you go to that gym, value yourself. And others, hopefully you will get that support. But if you don't get it, that's okay too. There's other people, there's places, people online that will do support, that will who have the same similar likes as you do. And try to find out to those people. I'm like, hey, how do you get started in this? Start your own business. That's one thing. If people have got the moxie to do it, God bless you. Start your own business.
All right. Well, would you say you found your job that you like?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was surprised. When you say the word paperwork, most people go like, ooh. It's never bothered me. It's not my favorite. But, you know, the more I do this, because if I don't do my job, the momentum to keep them moving forward. And so, yeah, sometimes, you know, who likes to do paperwork all the time? No. But I'm really enjoying how one simple decision affects my team member, affects the client, affects the parent, affects the parole officer. And that makes you feel good because APA, they're very supportive. Everybody believes in what they're doing. So it's really great. I never didn't think I was going to be so much in for administration, but I'm really liking it. So, just that thing, you never know. That's one thing I like. You never know what you're going to find until you start looking. But you got to get the courage up to do it. So, yeah, we'll see how long this lasts. We're going to apply again for another 2 years. This is only for a 2-year program, but we're going to apply again and we're going to see, hopefully, everything to keep rolling.
All right. Well, that's all I have for you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Courtney.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening to the Her Podcast from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. Join us every Tuesday as we highlight local women and discuss how they are making an impact in the community and what got them to where they are today.